Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our latest podcast episode where we'll be talking all things Amazon ads. We're joined by a really good selection of guests today, from ads tech providers through to in-house ad managers through to senior ads managers as well. So we'll get a real good 360 view of what's happening within the platform and all the different outlets they have currently within Amazon. We'll start with a very quick round robin of introductions to the guys. Mike, would you like to go first?
Yeah, so I'm Mike. I'm the head of advertising and media at VentureForge. I've been in the Amazon space for about 7-8 years, mainly focused on Amazon ads.
Fantastic. Elfie?
So I'm Elfie. I've worked in VentureForge now for 3 years as a PPC manager. I've got about 5 years experience in Amazon PPC and a few years experience in kind of Google and social media as well.
Fantastic. Thank you, Elfie. And then Bill?
Bill Carter. I am EMEA sales director at Packview. Been over at Packview for 4 years now. Been in the world of retail media for over 10 years. Spent 3.5 years at Amazon back in the day. Good to be here.
Didn't realise you'd worked at Amazon.
I have, yeah.
I bet it's changed a lot since then, though, hasn't it?
Big time.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much. As always with these things, if anybody has any questions, please do bob them into the chat as we go through, and the team will be answering those in the background. My glamorous assistant should pop a poll up on screen now as well. So if you could all just take your time just to read through it and answer those questions accordingly. Let's jump into the world of Amazon ads now, though. Mike, I'll come to you first. Tactical media on Amazon. How's it progressing? What's happening?
There's a lot happening, to be honest. We could look at this over the last few years, the last 10 years, but, you know, even in the last few months, it's been quite exciting in a fair few areas. So by tactical media, of course, we mean Amazon ads itself within console, but offsite with DSP2, and now the most recent introduction of AMC as well. That's the big exciting one. It's the one that you're going to hear everywhere. It's about AMC and how good it is. It is good, if you can understand it.
Yeah.
You don't need to be trained in SQL nowadays, which is very, very nice. AMC is the big new shiny buzzword that I know that Packview have been utilizing and have been great with, and we've been starting to look at quite a lot as well and integrate with our clients.
Yeah, absolutely. Why is it so important then?
You know, AMC is so much data, it's like, where do you start?
Yeah.
That's the thing, which is the beauty of it in the same way. So AMC, or Amazon Marketing Cloud, is a way to get really granular level data from advertising, not even just the advertising console, but how your consumers are shopping and how they're buying across a lot of different sections. So for some instances, you've got time of day purchases, so you can find out. You've got purchase journey as well. I think purchase journey is the more exciting one for anyone that's using a whole array of tactical media. But there is so much you can do. If you know SQL, or you can get ChatGPT to do it, then there is a lot that you can do.
Yeah.
Or using external tool providers.
Yeah.
You know? then at the same time, there's a lot more capability.
Yeah.
Within AMC at the minute, there's about 10 predefined things within the console, which is a fantastic starting point, but again, you can go so much deeper as well.
How are you seeing it from a tech provider's perspective and how it's changing the landscape?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good point you made around almost too much data and it being quite daunting for a lot of brands to, where do you start? Like, what do you do with it? I think that's the beauty of having a piece of kit like Packview. We've got a number of pre-templated reports that you can pull to help to visualize a lot of those metrics that you just mentioned. You know, branded searches, are they on the increase or decrease? Ideal media mix. And then being able to do things like create custom AMC audiences off the back of that. So instead of just having this large database of information and not knowing what to do with it, all of a sudden being in a situation where you can take that data really quickly, visualize it via the pre-templatized reports, see how well your DSP and search media mix is performing, and then actually use that to populate your audiences moving forward. It means it's both quick in terms of seeing how you're currently doing, but also actionable in terms of taking it onto the next level. So that just means it's just ever more accessible for all clients, which is exactly where we wanted to be.
Good. We were joking about this earlier, weren't we? Are you almost at the risk of having too much information?
Yeah, definitely.
What do you do with it?
Absolutely. And, you know, depending on who you ask, if they're an ads manager, they're like, there's no such thing as too much data.
Elfie's cursing you as you say.
you ask a brand manager in-house, and they're like, please stop giving me more spreadsheets to look at, like, and SQL. I guess it does depend on who you are and how you quantify that data at the same time. But there is a lot.
Yeah.
A lot that you can use.
What's the I guess somebody that hasn't used AMC before, because it is still relatively new, it's been there for a while. What are the core uses of it?
I'd definitely just chip in here. It is new for Amazon, but Google's had access to this data for a very long time. So I think it wasn't very exciting for everyone that's in kind of the Google space, but it was very exciting for Amazon, just because it's allowed us to really understand things like attribution, the value of those kind of top funnel awareness driving ads, and DSP as well.
Yeah, I think like understanding the importance of DSP into your entire sort of full funnel cycle is one of the most important things that AMC helps us to understand. Like back in the day, DSP was really easy to take off of plans because it doesn't always show a direct ROAS, if you want to call it that. So it was kind of very quick to be, we're paying a lot for that DSP. Let's reinvest that budget back into search, bottom of the funnel, and we can start seeing them conversions come through. When actually what we're seeing now is you're targeting consumers that weren't even aware of your product in some cases, filling that top of the funnel up with new consumers or new to brand, and that lifetime value of that consumer might be double or treble what you might have got from a bottom of the funnel conversion on search. So it's all about having the data to help populate that. And also it's very category specific, right? It depends on the price point and the category that they're working in.
And with AMC now as well, we can actually measure that lifetime value and understand it. So we can work out if it is actually working to have X amount of money in DSP or top of funnel ads.
I think that's the really important thing about AMC. In a lot of areas, it's going to help you make a decision. Yeah. It's not going to optimize your campaign off the get-go. So if you are a brand and you're, you know, the ads manager at a brand and you're looking to secure more budget, you know, it's going into DSP, as we were saying before, and it's like not really showing the same level of results as what you get the bottom funnel. Now we can see that pathway and we can see exactly how that is converting together. So knowing that the DSP is driving towards Amazon and completing that purchase, knowing that even the on-site ads, so looking at the sponsored brand, is helping drive towards the purchase through a sponsored products or going through different mediums of Amazon advertising. It's fantastic to see, to know that some of those quote-unquote low-performing campaigns by ACOS or ROAS are actually pivotal towards the overall strategy within an account.
And I think one of the like metrics or the visualizations that we see in the reports that is really widely used is the effective media mix. So it can show you how many times you should be showing your DSP campaigns. So should you be frequency capping your DSP campaigns to hit that sweet spot? And then how many interactions with search does it before you actually get a sale through? And that is really important data. So to make sure that you're not going over the top with the amount of interactions that you provide on DSP, but also not going too low and kind of frequency capping too low. So,
would you say AMC and DSP are core to ad strategies today? Or are they still seen as an add-on almost?
I think they're still seen as an add-on, just because of the way they've progressed and been introduced by Amazon, but they're not.
Yeah.
And also you don't have to necessarily be looking to use DSP to use AMC. There's a lot of capability now just in the ads console. I think it was a few days ago that I noticed it, but they've just launched a sponsored display audiences with AMC targeting capability. So there's a lot you can do within the console as well.
I was going to say, it's a classic line for me, it depends. Because
coming through it,
there is a theme. Again, I'll get the t-shirt that it depends on next time.
It depends.
Budget is a big thing, right? You know, you can run DSP on a lower budget. As you're saying, you might cap frequencies or so by not doing too much, but there are just some brands out there that can't afford it. And, you know, maybe it is the market that you're in just doesn't have that level of customer available. If you're very niche, yes, you want to bring those customers in, but also if you're only going to get a couple of purchases a month, then you have to question if it's worth the investment at the same time. On the flip side, there's going to be some that are non-endemic that want to use DSP and have absolutely no chance of using Amazon ads on site because they're selling something that is not a e-commerce product, right? So it is, like you said, Alfie, where it's positioned from Amazon at the same time and how they've introduced this. But the ideal scenario is that you do use them all. If you can, you've got that full range and full scope to make the best decisions possible. But it's not the end of the world. If you can't, there's still a lot of things that you can do.
I think that comes back down to managing expectations on a client-by-client basis, right? If a client has, I don't know, 50K's worth of ad spend on PPC a month, and they're looking at spending 5K on DSP and expecting it to work instantly, that can be a can of worms that might be opened up. And we don't necessarily have minimum spends on DSP at PackView, but we have suggested spends on a monthly basis purely because of the fact that A, we know it takes a bit longer to optimize your DSP campaigns. And B, if you haven't got the spend running consistently over the course of, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, how can you expect to see the benefits of a sort of more upper funnel activation? So
I think for myself, this is one of the reasons that I really wanted to partner with PackView on DSP is that you don't have those minimum spend limits. Because if you are a brand and you don't know if this is going to work and you are stepping out into the unknown, you don't really want to invest 10K a month in something that might not work for you. So I think having that kind of lower threshold allows you to test and learn, experiment with a bit of spend, and potentially pull it away from PPC and see if it actually even works for your product and your brand on Amazon.
Definitely. And I think that's where these AMC audiences are going to be so beneficial for all clients, because you can really quickly apply audiences to, say, cart abandoners or people who look like purchasers, really quickly set those audiences up. And they should be much more of a higher converting or with a higher CTR. So managing those expectations from that regard, from a DSP perspective, is only going to be a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely would say as well that even if a brand is fairly small, they're not investing a lot in PPC, especially if they're FMCG, trying and trialing DSP would be really beneficial, especially with, you know, retargeting, cross-targeting, and just the capability that's there.
I know you've done it a few times recently with brands where we forecasted quite big spend through DSP, but you've actually very quickly narrowed that because it didn't achieve anything.
Yeah, and I've kind of started to scale and then been like, we're not really seeing what we'd expect, and we can track that through AMC and understand kind of the value of what we're investing.
Yeah, and do you think it's quite important in that mindset, I guess, to bring off-site and on-site ads together to build that true funnel approach?
Personally, I do try and do this with all DSP spend, even if it's very small.
Yeah.
So 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, you can still invest something in kind of that upper funnel awareness, off-site targeting. I personally love custom media lists because you can choose exactly where your ad's going to display.
Yeah.
You can pick things like, for example, home and garden, or if you want to run an ad on the sun, we can do that and we can target a specific publication.
Yeah.
I think as well, something that I harp on about a little bit that I really enjoy about just being multimedia and on and off-site Amazon, if you are off-site across a lot of platforms and a lot of different ways to channel or to use different channels on DSP alongside, let's say, sponsored TV within console, having that similar creative and that similar video, or if not the same video across those multimedia, creates such a bigger picture for the customer. Yeah. If they see you on multiple touch points, that's really going to help drive towards Amazon as well. So the power of some of that offsite and the brand consistency, I think is the best way to put it, can be really powerful in terms of driving that extra traffic. And that's something that reflects from the videos itself. Let's say it's on Twitch or Prime Video, sponsored TV, but even on the creatives on a product page, looking at the main carousel imagery, the A+ content, consistent color theme or consistent messaging, whatever it is, can make a massive difference towards conversion and ultimately the customer coming towards you.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when we first spoke about DSP way back when we first launched it as an agency, the data and the tracking that you can get versus Google Ads as well. It's far superior because obviously you're tracking right through to purchase as well, aren't you?
I mean, I was going to say, like, Google's a mess with tracking at the minute. So, yeah. I mean, I think we're all very happy. We don't have to do Google anymore. I don't know. Maybe it's been updated now and it's sorted. But yeah, it seems we can get to the very bottom, you know, of the funnel and even past it, right, into the loyalty phase. You know, we get the full view of what's going on. There's no ambiguity on did this person buy or not.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit, but not really. Like, you know, it's pretty much concrete to say they went here, they went here, they went here.
Yeah.
This is the purchase journey. And we're going to bring them back with a bit of remarketing as well.
And I think, again, going back to that managing expectations piece, if you know from the off what the client's expecting out of their DSP campaigns or their, you know, media mix, whatever, you know, however, whatever percentages there are, you can help to guide where they're going to go with that. And the rules in PackView help you to create, you mentioned around, like, you know, creating whitelists of, you know, sites that are super effective. If you let the data, like, populate that and say, okay, as long as the metrics are above a certain click-through rate or a certain conversion rate, then you can automatically adjust that kind of whitelist of sites that they want to go to. So it just means you're letting data lead the way and then going back to the client and saying, look, these are the sites that are working at the moment. They're constantly being updated or changed dependent on performance, and let's see where we go.
I've had that happen recently with a client, and it was somewhere that we weren't advertising previously. And they do a lot of home and kind of DIY products. And they were showing up a lot on Mumsnet, and we were getting a lot of good conversions through Mumsnet. So we added that into a custom media list and it did really well. But it wasn't somewhere that I automatically kind of thought to run the ads.
I guess that's the point of it, isn't it? You've got to learn, test and learn, haven't you? And going back to the bit around budgets, there's people that have endless budgets to just go do that. But you've got to invest enough to make it work, haven't you? Going back to DSP then, how do you use DSP? Because again, when you think of DSP, you just think awareness. How do you use it to actually drive something more than awareness?
There's so many ways you can use it. You don't necessarily, I feel like when DSP, Amazon DSP was launched, there was a lot of talk about you have to have maxed out PPC and this is about brand awareness, and that's just not really the case. There's a lot you can do in terms of competitor conquesting, retargeting to people. And with AMC now, you can see exactly when they're rebuying a product. So say if you're selling cereal or cat food, you can understand exactly when they're coming back to buy again and target them and serve them with a DSP ad at that exact time. You can also cross-target between your own products. I have a current, well, one of my DSP clients at the moment, they have one hero ASIN on Amazon, but then they're launching a lot of new things and we're using that audience to kind of cross-target and launch products as well. So there's a lot of options.
I think it's a really good point that you don't have to have maxed out Amazon ads first, right? It can be used whenever. You know, it can be used from the launch of brand new products if you really want, right? And, you know, when we think about different categories that we can target in different areas, even different websites, there's no reason to say that these can't be quite, even though it is a top funnel placement, generally, in terms of where they appear, doesn't mean they can't drive that bottom funnel traffic at the same time, you know. Let's take the Mumsnet example as a target. If you're selling baby toys, pacifiers, you know, comfort blankets, that's very, very targeted and very precise. Like, if someone is clicking on that ad, I'm expecting a high chance of conversion right at that point, you know, especially to go off site or off the existing site they're on to go look at a product. That's a very high intent to buy at the same time. So, as much as, like we said, it has a stigma behind it to be very top of funnel, there's definitely ways to make it bottom funnel at the same time.
Why was it always thought of as an add-on to ads? Because I up until recently did still think that.
I think because you get the almost like the instant wow factor of a, you know, ROAS boost with bottom of the funnel search. If you're a marketing manager or a marketplace manager wanting to justify your budgets, and you can say, I've got a ROAS of 8.2 over here and DSP is only generating a 2.3, where's the budget going to be allocated? You know, traditionally, that's how the mindset kind of went down. But I think it's such a good point around, you know, the different strategies that you can employ. They can be much more display-led. They can show off features and functionality or collaborations, but you can also be very tactical with it in terms of retargeting. And especially if the RRP of a product is fairly high, the consideration period for that purchase is going to be longer. So they might come onto Amazon, have a look at a few different products within that category, go away, make their decision. And if they can then be retargeted with a certain creative, either for a product detail page or more function-based, it can be the difference between winning that sale or not. So it really is just about how consumers shop now.
Yeah.
And that is both on Amazon and, you know, off-site too. So you have to be wherever the consumer is.
Yeah.
I think as well with, you know, because there's a lot of videos that go behind it as well, and you're appearing on Twitch or Freevee, Prime, whatever, all these different areas, it reminds everyone very much of traditional retail TV media, right? Or TV media. So you're watching your EastEnders. And you get, actually,
no, they're on BBC. Is that an
admission? You're watching your getting your ads afterwards. There's no option to click and buy on the TV, right? You know, I think that's what a lot of people see. And that's maybe why it was initially thought as being very top funnel and more generic in terms of its targeting, because you've got your Pepsis and your Cokes and, you know, your Ariels, the big brands that will just throw money at TV advertising, protecting brand share. But this is a different opportunity, really, of DSP, because it's targeted and you're very precise in where it is. It's a fraction of the cost of TV pricing, at the very least. So you've got more opportunity for it to not be as top funnel anymore. Yeah. But it's easy to understand why that mindset is still there for a lot of brands and customers.
And I think going back to something you mentioned, Elfie, around like attributed value of interactions that happen earlier on in the purchase cycle. So you might have three or four DSP interactions where the consumer hasn't actually clicked on it. They go on to make their final purchase via, sponsored ads directly on Amazon. Does that mean that those interactions that happened earlier on are of zero value? And AMC enables you to allocate value to those interactions so you can actually see, right, they were of X amount of importance in that purchase cycle. So it can be quite a good way to actually add value to your DSP discussions that we didn't have access to previously.
Interesting. Very interesting. going back to AMC then. So what does AMC offer that sponsored ads doesn't in terms of insights? Where should we start? Is this going to be a long, long list?
Anything?
Yeah. I'm happy to start and I'll keep it brief so you guys have a chance to talk about it as well, because I think just with ads, you're capped at the set metrics that are in there. I mean, conversion rate is still not even in the ad console, right? You know, and things like that. You are very capped. AMC allows you to see so many different data points that you can not make your own metrics, but, you know, you can see the metrics that you want and the ones that are actually going to drive decisions. Whereas on ads, yes, you have some very key and core metrics in there, but you might not be getting the data of, you know, specific customers and when they're buying, how they're buying. That's not available realistically from the ads console.
When you're saying when, are you talking times of day? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Are you going to talk about that?
And I was just going to say, for me, AMC just allows you to be more strategic in terms of PPC. You might not want to kind of move beyond PPC, but you can still use those insights really well. So for example, you can see new to brand purchases. We can actually get an accurate view on new to brand purchases and what products are driving those new to brand purchases. This might be something that we've looked at in the ads console and gone, ROAS of one. But if that's driving all your new to brand into your product, you're going to have a very different strategy. So I think it just gives so much more visibility that you can then use to inform strategy.
I think as well, depending on the product there too. So if you're a product with massive repeat purchase behind it, whether I always use the example of protein powder, you know, every 60 days or something. You've heard it a million times, yeah. like every 60 days, you know, you're rebuying it, right? Baby wipes, same sort of thing. All these areas, if you're getting all these brand new to customers in, but it's quote unquote inefficient, but they're coming back time and time and time again, that's the sort of insights that you need to say, actually, this is a really valuable campaign. Forget about the ROAS, forget about the ACOS. This is what is actually driving value.
Because I was just going to say, because not having a clear view of attribution before has been really difficult in terms of being an ads manager. Because say, for example, just looking at PPC campaigns, somebody clicks into a sponsored brand, they go to your store, they click off, they go somewhere else, they click into that sponsored brand again, they then click on a sponsored product and buy the product that they've seen in the brand store. You might have an awful ROAS on that sponsored brand campaign. And we had no visibility on where people were clicking, kind of where they were purchasing through. So I think so many people just were like, oh, these campaigns all had an awful ROAS, let's turn them off, when actually that is what's driving growth on Amazon.
Yeah, I was just going to say, they've answered it, to be fair. But one thing that keeps kind of cropping up in my mind in terms of sort of adding value to your DSP strategy is AMC's value is full funnel, right? So if you can show a client that actually your branded keyword searches on Amazon are on a trajectory like this, and you haven't seen the ROAS directly off of your DSP campaigns, you could quite clearly make an argument to say there's a good chance that a lot of the work you've been doing on DSP has actually transpired in people coming directly onto Amazon and not going into the category, but searching directly for your brand or product. And that is so invaluable. If you're bypassing your competitors, going directly to your brand or product, and that's on the rise, that's a marketeer's dream, right?
Yeah, and a lot of people run social ads like that. So they'll run ads on Instagram, for example, that are more informative and just driving that brand awareness. And then they'll have Google ads that are actually picking up that increased branded search.
I think that is one thing as well. I think we've touched on it in different ways here, where if you are someone that has come from a purely PPC focus initially, bringing in something like DSP or even using AMC's utilization to monitor and realize the effectiveness of campaigns, you have to just forget about ROAS for a little bit and accept it, right? It is really hard to do when you come from purely trying to drive bottom funnel. But at the end of the day, this is driving bottom funnel. And setting expectations or mindset, whatever it is, you need to think about it bigger picture with DSP. And as we were saying with AMC before, it's about helping make those decisions. So when we can see, for the most part anyway, when we can see the effectiveness of the sponsor brand campaigns, of the DSP campaigns, and how they factor into everything else, where they've not been fully attributed elsewhere, that is your cue to say, this is my decision being made, right? And that's what AMC can give you a lot more than what you can get just within console.
So I think we're a fan of AMC then. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It's still new, it's still shiny. Maybe we'll change our minds and be like, don't give us enough data. But right now, big fan.
Good. Perfect. Look, if anybody's got any questions, keep bobbing them down in the question box and the team will continue to answer those. Jumping back, Elfie, you started to talk about kind of not just off-site media, but wider kind of marketing strategies. How should brands prioritize the on-site versus off-site versus kind of halo effect of TikTok, Instagram? Because again, I know it's something we talk to brands a lot about external pushes.
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult one. It's really easy sometimes on Amazon if, for example, a brand has a massive presence on TikTok. You could be launching something on Amazon like, this is going amazing. Yeah. I've got an amazing ROAS. I've basically done nothing. And it's actually coming from, the demand's been driven from elsewhere. So I think it's really important to have conversations with wider marketing teams. Amazon sometimes kind of exists in a bubble, but it isn't. So we need to have conversations with marketing managers, wider strategy, and kind of understand how that impacts what's going on Amazon.
Does it change your approach if a brand has a TikTok, for example, we've mentioned? Does it change your approach if they have a fantastic TikTok presence versus they don't have any TikTok presence?
Yes, it would do for myself, just because I'd be more cognizant of the fact that they don't have any offsite media being driven, like there's no traffic coming. So you might, for example, want to invest a little bit more in consideration and that brand awareness on Amazon if you don't have it coming from elsewhere.
Yeah.
I think it's what I was, again, touching on, brand consistency between those different platforms. If you can have that same messaging, same presence on TikTok and drive that into Amazon, brilliant. You know, it it completes the customer journey, and that's the big thing. Makes it so easy to purchase. It's not just TikTok, of course. Yeah. There's multiple different channels. A lot of brands have a D2C presence as well as Amazon, and TikTok's being driven there. But same time, driving TikTok into Amazon is actually very beneficial from a ranking perspective too. So I would highly encourage that, using Amazon attribution in order to track it as well. But might be on a separate topic here if I start talking about Amazon attribution.
I'm going to say I can see us going off on TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just quickly going to say as well, as you say, it's also about other above the line activations. Are they running TV campaigns? Are they doing some podcast activity? Are they doing other bits and pieces that sit outside of, you know, performance media, as it's traditionally sort of known as? And understanding that can be the difference between sort of when you have your campaigns live. Are you going to implement day parting on your DSP and search strategy? Do you want to try and tie those up together in the lead up to Q4, as an example? So I think knowing that, having the visibility on it is super important.
Yeah. Just going back to the external traffic bit, is that an effective strategy to use from an ads perspective, or does that just benefit organic?
It depends.
Another one.
I have to stop asking him for any questions.
Yeah, it depends.
I feel like with a lot of ads questions, it's how long is a piece of string, because every single product is different, and then every single ad strategy is different. So it might not be right for for some brands, and it is for others. I think sometimes that's the issue, is people hear somebody discussing a strategy or a media mix that's worked, and they think, oh, I'll go and try and I'll invest in that because they've had this result, when it's not right for your brand.
And I think that's something that at Packview we really want to help brands and agencies understand, is that segmentation. So not looking at an account from an entire portfolio perspective, but actually creating tags to really segment out the subcategories and provide share of voice on that subcategory or niche. Yeah. Because what might work, as you say, Alfie, for a specific niche or category might not be applicable to the wider portfolio. So that's something that we really do sort of advocate for at Packview.
And sometimes as well, you think about, just as we were saying, specific products and brands, some things work, some things don't. If you're advertising in the middle of the night on baby products from DSP, great. You know, you're going to get your hits.
Clicked on some of them ads before, don't I?
That's where Mumsnet, you know, it's working for all Alfie's products, right? But if you're trying to make, you know, windscreen washer fluid sexy with videos, it's not really going to work, right?
Yeah.
So there is a level in terms of the products that is going to factor that. I mean, maybe it doesn't. Maybe people really like windscreen washer fluid, but to me, I think that's going to be more, you're driving through sponsored ads, right? More than anything else. You might want to drive the brand and, you know, more awareness into the brand from a DSP perspective. But, you know, your sponsored TV and video ads are not going to be as product focused and as exciting as some other products out there.
I think that's why having an honest conversation at the start of any client conversation to say, where are you in your current life cycle? Who are your competitors? What are they up to on Amazon or your core marketplaces? And then build a strategy off the back of that. As you say, if they're expecting, you know, miracles and it's not happening for any other brand within the category, then you can manage that back pretty quickly.
Okay. So we're in Q4 now. What are the best actions that brands can take? And I know you're going to say it depends. But what are those top tips that brands should be looking at now, bearing in mind we've just come out of key periods?
I think for myself, I would always say good ad strategy happens in Q3 for Q4. So now I'd be thinking about Q1, which, to be honest, I'd be thinking about Q1, how to drive growth in January. So you can still get a lot set up off the bat now.
Yeah.
Just to capture that data, because there's so much more traffic over Q4, and you can do things like, not even necessarily with DSP, but retargeting, make sure you have views, purchase retargeting set up. You can do that both with PPC and DSP. Also remarketing to basket abandoners, having brand tailored promotions set up in advance, and just making sure that you capture that data that's coming through. I would say it's a little bit late in the day to be trying a brand new strategy or something like that. I probably would have done that maybe August time, August, September, but there's still a lot you can do to kind of capture that data.
I was going to say, if it is panic stations, at least give it a go. Something's going to be better than nothing.
Yeah.
Won't be the best optimized thing in the world. And we would highly advocate to start early. But we understand that doesn't always happen. So at least from that perspective, if you're brand new to ads, it's going to be tough, right? But if you're someone that's had an always-on strategy or had campaigns running throughout the year, and that needs a bit of adapting, a bit of tweaking, you can still got a bit of time to build up before Q4 or before Black Friday, let's say, you should be okay. But if you're watching this in 2026, start planning whatever time it is for the next Q4 now, because ultimately that is what's important. It is, you have to be really ahead of the game for Q4.
Yeah.
It is a time of the year where we see some brands make 2/3 of all the revenue they're going to make in a year in this period. So generally they're the ones that are very good at planning, let's be real, because they know it's going to happen. The brands are fairly consistent or maybe get a bit of a gifting spike, but not enormous. That's where you should have started a little bit earlier. But again, still, if you've got time, you can still...
So you wouldn't look to launch DSP, integrate AMC during Q4?
Well, I don't know. I think it can be really daunting or deemed as daunting to launch DSP. And if you've never used AMC before, where do I go? What do I start with? Like, how do I action that? I think that there is still time. Elfie, to your point, if all things being set up properly and tested on your traditional ad strategy in Q2, Q3, if you're in a good spot and you want to just try and give it a little push, I think that there is still a lot of opportunity to capitalize on the AMC audiences of, as you said, cart abandoners or retargeting people that have come in and looked at your brand or category. So I think there's still a lot of time for opportunity there.
Yeah.
I'd definitely say, though, make sure you don't have a leaky funnel. So that loyalty and that purchase, you've really secured that no matter what you're utilizing.
So that is something that's one of my favorite strategies post a big event, is the actual remarketing side of it, whether that is purchases or views remarketing through DSP or from the Amazon advertising itself. Post Prime Day, I really enjoy, and I was saying this before, I haven't got this set up yet, but I really enjoy getting some views remarketing campaigns going, and even basket abandoners now is quite new. Is going to be very exciting, because driving some of that traffic that was looking on Prime Day, if they didn't purchase, it's a good chance they're going to be looking again on Black Friday. We were having a discussion earlier about, do we think the attitudes are changing towards Prime Day because they might be waiting until Black Friday? They think there's going to be a bit of a better deal on Black Friday or the Cyber Monday tag. You know, if you're looking at a TV and the discounts on Prime Day, you do, in the back of your head, are you going, well, if I wait a month and a half, am I going to get a better deal on Cyber Monday? Possibly. So there might be a little bit of that within there, making sure that you're bringing those customers back.
Yeah.
Like, hello, you looked at us. Let's look again. That could be a really powerful technique in order to bring those customers back and complete the purchase cycle.
Does that go back to the point that you were making earlier, I guess, around DSP is sometimes hard to quantify because they've got those 3, 4, 5 impressions before they've converted?
I mean, look, as we just said, the idea behind it being quite daunting and wanting almost like instant results, especially in Q4, you know, Q4 results can make or break your year. You know, what did we say? Some brands, 80% of their sales come in Q4. So it can be quite daunting to shift some of your media budget from that bottom of the funnel over to DSP. But if it's done in the right way, PackView, as I said, we have rules in place that can help you to almost like safeguard your DSP spend. Only, you know, increase spend or upweight budgets when you're seeing the metrics come down the funnel. And I think that means it's a pretty safe bet if run properly and with the right creatives. So I just think traditionally DSP was seen for some brands as completely out of reach, and I don't think that's the case anymore.
No.
And that's purely because of AMC and the actionability of a lot of the data in there. So,
yeah.
I think there's also a lot you can play around within the ads console, like sponsored TV. I feel is a bit slept on because you know that's upper funnel. You're using a lot of the same audiences as you would in DSP. If you want to give something a go, that could be a really good place to start.
You said something then, Bill, about DSP run successfully. What does that mean?
Yeah, if you've never run a DSP campaign or never set one up, it can be quite daunting to go in and try and do it yourself. But come and speak to PackView. You know, we've got a lot of the guys that work on our team are either ex-agency or ex-Amazon with a lot of DSP experience. We've got a DSP onboarding team that can guide you through the steps, and we have a step-by-step guide. So yeah, if anybody that's listening in is a bit daunted or sort of wary of how to set them up, come and have a chat with us. We won't sort of leave you hanging. we're here to support and help. And ultimately, we do want more brands running a full funnel Amazon strategy. And if it's holding you back that you don't know how to set up a DSP campaign, like, no questions, silly question, come and ask us and we can help you to do it.
Absolutely.
The important thing again as well is, because we talk more about more brands wanting to do it, I think the question of affordability is always there, because it's always been seen as it's going to be really expensive. It actually really doesn't need to anymore, does it? Like, it's, you know, that again, that stigma has changed. And whilst there are recommendations and areas that we would say this is where you're going to get the best results or the best bang for your buck, we can also quite confidently say, well, if you're trying to test it and give it a go, let's run it on this budget over the next 3 months and see how it goes.
The equivalent I would say is, on the ad side, we have a rule that is stop wasted spend. And that's where, if you've been spending budget on keywords that haven't performed for you, you want to start decrease those and stop allocating a load of your spend on keywords that aren't performing for you as a brand. It's exactly the same on the DSP side. There's now ways and means to apply targeting to make sure that it's almost like a safe space to try DSP and start to see the performance. And then you can grow into the more display-led or, you know, targeting brand new consumers. So I think that there are ways and means of doing it on a client-by-client basis.
I think as well, well, this is just my opinion, but with the way people watch TV now, the opportunities through DSP are massive. Obviously, there's the new Netflix partnership as well, but also with Prime. Previous, if you go back 20, 30 years, you couldn't be like, oh, I'll just try a grand and advertise on the TV. Like, it wouldn't happen. And now you have the opportunity to test it on Prime Video, on Netflix, and just try a little bit of budget. So I actually think the opportunity is massive there. And kind of Amazon DSP for me has really democratized a lot of media.
Okay. That's genuinely one of the best explanations I've heard in terms of like how you compare it. Like, because it's so easy to not think of it that way, but you're right. Like, could you have ever just, you know, gone and tried to buy placement on TV with a grand? No.
Yeah.
Like, you know, even $2,500, you're probably not at the same time. Like, these are levels that you could start at, right?
Yeah.
And it is feasible. So it's worth giving it a little go and seeing what you get out of it. With all the opportunities, and you're so right in terms of the way that consumers view media nowadays, in terms of Netflix and Prime Video, they're at your doorstep, you know, with DSP. Yeah. They really are. Alongside all the other, God knows how many targets they have, right? They've got so many. So you don't have to be limited towards them, but there's a massive opportunity in targeting different ways through the different channels to get some really good results from it.
So we've talked about DSP being kind of really top of funnel. We've talked about it being quite expensive, but not expensive, and a great conversion driver. Would you expect to see a smaller ROAS with DSP than you would with sponsored ads, or could you utilize it in a very same way?
You could, and this is something I wanted to touch on. So I know AMC is the buzzword that everyone in the Amazon space is talking about, but the word incrementality has been the one that's been going around in the world of retail media for such a long time. And I think that's the big thing.
Okay.
It's about value, right? So yes, it may have a lower ROAS as a direct campaign analysis or direct performance analysis. But if you look at it, which is what AMC is designed to, as a full funnel opportunity, is it going to deliver more incremental sales or sales that you wouldn't have got if you weren't running that upper funnel activity? If the answer is yes, then that's a good thing for your business. And if the answer is no, then maybe DSP isn't right for your particular brand at that particular time. And something PackView do have is an incrementality calculator or tool to help you to calculate what that iROAS looks like. It's been a long time coming, and as everyone knows, incrementality isn't a perfect science, but the model that we've created at least gives an essence of what you are getting as a bang for your buck that sits over and above what you normally would have.
I was just going to say, I think that's the beauty as well in terms of the way you've said about incrementality. Depending on where you are as your business as a whole, if you feel extremely saturated, like you've done everything with Amazon ads, which is rarely the case, but you know, you feel like you've done everything, what do you do next? Right? You know, at least you have a door to open to go, this is where I'm going to get the next level of sales on Amazon and the next ones after that. When people talk about completing Amazon ads, or you know, done everything, tried everything, think about that, but then for DSP as well, right? I'd never heard a brand of completing DSP, that's for sure. So there is so much in there. Yeah. Oh yeah. How much money do you have? Like, there is so much to try and to learn to gain, get those incremental gains to increase those sales. So when we look at that from a ROAS perspective, you could argue that ROAS really does not matter in that moment because you have capped out, maxed out, whatever you want to call it. You're not necessarily looking at the return from this perspective. You're looking at how many new customers can I bring in? How many more people can I get into the top of the funnel to potentially come out the bottom end with a better ROAS overall?
I was just going to ask a question and say, how do you almost measure that halo effect? But I guess you've just answered that. How do you quantify that? I don't know if you can. It might be a rhetorical question.
The only way I've got is what I mentioned earlier, which is trying to allocate a financial value for interactions that happen that maybe aren't like direct actions.
Yeah.
That's the only way that I can think. You know, it's the same as if you're walking through central London and you see a billboard for a particular product and then you go home, click on a sponsored ad and buy it. You know, that poor billboard doesn't get the value that it needs, and it's all done on a calculation of footfall going past that billboard at any one time. So with AMC, at least now we've got a way to see, okay, how many times should I show this ad to this group of consumers that I'm trying to market to, and what impact is it going to have? So I think that's really, from a halo perspective, the best way of doing it.
Yeah, okay. Flipping it on its head a little bit then, what's the biggest mistake that brands make when they're trying to either attribute DSP or run DSP?
I'll start with that one just purely because I've seen it both when I was at Amazon and also seen it now from a PackView perspective. And I think maybe setting the campaigns up from more of a branding perspective, so not retargeting, actually trying to go out there and get top of funnel consumers into your marketing mix, and trying to rush it. I don't think you can rush DSP. It's, you know, if you are going to go out there and retarget to consumers who have looked at your product, I think that's very different. But I think when you're trying to build up that branding strategy, and the sites that compile your DSP strategy, A/B testing on creative, constantly looking at your media and where you're serving it, is something that you can't rush. So it does take minimum of 8 to 10 weeks before you even start to see the performance indicators there.
Yeah, I think it's about strategy as well, and going into it knowing what you want to achieve, because then that'll inform your KPIs and your metrics and what you're monitoring. So I think just making sure that whatever you're doing, you have a clear ad strategy behind that.
Going to be my answer. Strategy and patience, literally mixed together.
Like, depends, yeah.
Strategy and patience. Like, you know, you can... everything we've said is that it can be so hard to quantify, right, in terms of how successful it is. You have to be patient. But, you know, it's going to take 8 to 10 weeks before we can really start to optimize it and get it to move and going in a different direction if it needs it, really. So having a good strategy, good foundation from the beginning, as Alfie was saying, but having the patience and afterwards to say, this is going to take a little bit of time to get going. All these new customers are coming in certain areas. They're not going to come out like that.
Yeah. Right?
It's going to take a little bit of time to get there.
I've also worked with clients where they actually use more of their, I wouldn't necessarily call brand awareness, but their top funnel strategies on Amazon PPC, and their bottom funnel strategy is on DSP. So you can you know, build your strategy however you want it. So what they were doing there was using Amazon PPC campaigns to be very aggressive against competitors, drive a lot of brand awareness. And because it was something that people would want to repurchase, we were using all kind of that retargeting on DSP, which is much more powerful. So we had a very bad ROAS on the Amazon PPC side, but really good performance on DSP. So you don't have to do it that way. I think it just depends on your strategy.
Yeah, I've never seen it done that way before. Wow. Very interesting. Okay, flip it the other way again now. What are the must-dos for DSP and AMC if you are going to do it? Other than planning and strategizing, of course.
Like, other than it depends, because of course where I was going to start. Well, depends on your objectives, right?
Had to get it.
I had to. I mean, it's sort of counter to what Bill was saying before, where some pieces are more branding focused, other pieces are more bringing customers into the top of the funnel. So if you're trying to get that incremental gain, you need those new customers coming in. And that should be an area that you're focusing on, the way that you target and set up those campaigns from a strategy perspective. But if you're looking at it more from a bigger branding piece as well, then it's not necessarily about getting those customers in. That's not the objective. It might be about just brand defense and market share at that point. You know, Coca-Cola and Pepsi, is there a person on the planet that doesn't know who they are? No. Do they advertise every day? Yeah. Right? Different strategies are going to lead to different results. So it depends on what the
objective
is.
Number six or seven?
Just a little swear job.
I was going to say identifying pains and within their sort of existing campaign structure, or not even within their campaign structure, where are they at as a business? Like identifying the pains and identifying the strengths on a case-by-case basis. I think one thing I've really got from today's session so far is about that every single brand is different.
Yeah.
Every single approach is different. What works for one won't necessarily work for other. You can use case studies and apply learnings, of course you can, but ultimately, you need to go in and really identify strengths, weaknesses, and then apply campaign structure from there. And that's how, you know, it's got to be, really.
Yeah.
I think for myself, as a rule that I always follow, is I always start from the bottom of the funnel. And I think that can sometimes be a mistake as well, where people try and run before they can walk. So I think you need to be looking at your conversion, like your organic and paid conversion rate, and really starting in that area with DSP and AMC, doing, for example, remarketing people that have added to cart but they haven't checked out, all these kind of little things. Because I feel like if you're then going and doing Netflix on DSP, or you're driving in kind of all this upper funnel traffic, but you don't have a good product display page, if you're not remarketing all these things, I think you'll just end up not having a good return and thinking it's DSP when actually is your product page isn't where it needs to be. You might not have subscribe and save set up. There could be problems with delivery and things like that. So really starting at that bottom of funnel.
Yeah. Nice. Do you know what? I think we've managed to get near enough through a full hour without talking about organic works as well, which is obviously a huge part of this. So I think, yes, you're absolutely right. Starting from the foundations and building up, I'd completely agree with you on that. Look, we're down to the last 5 minutes now, so I've just got one more question to ask you all. So not DSP, not AMC related, sponsored ads related. What is your top tip for success on sponsored ads? I'm looking at you first, Mike.
Just in general?
In general.
Please say it depends.
Well, it depends.
Other than integrating the marketing, of course.
Annoyingly, it does depend, Bill. Top tip, that's... I mean, there's all sorts, right, realistically. Granularity, I think, is a buzzword, again, but is very important. So the way you structure your campaigns ultimately will impact the outcome that you're going to get from it. If you want maximum efficiency, then you need to go as granular as possible. The reason that depends, though, is because not everyone's got the budget to go as granular as possible. You could have campaigns per keyword, per match type, with specific bids on. You could have it by time of day if you really wanted, like, and have different campaigns for that. No real point in that, but you know, you can have the budget controls from that perspective. You could have that exact same keyword three times, the same match type across different replacements, yeah, you can go quite granular. It's a bit too much at times. A lot of people are not in a luxury position to be able to do that, realistically. But at the very least, segmentation into single product campaigns, single keyword campaigns, understanding your most important keywords, trying to build ranking on them from the help of sponsored ads. These are all things that are going to help build the bigger picture from an ads perspective.
Perfect.
I think for myself, always letting the customer and the data lead you. So not going into your advertising strategy with kind of preset ideas of who your customer is and how they're shopping on Amazon, and just making sure that whatever data you have access to, that you're learning from that and you're taking that on board. Because I think it's easy to say, my customer is this person, they shop like this, and that might not actually be the case. So I think if you want successful ads, you have to look at the data and really start to understand who your customer is.
That's a good tip, that one. Like that.
I'm going to steal yours, Alfie. retail readiness, like, are there factors outside of your ad strategy that might be impacting performance? We've got Packview Commerce, which is like our supply chain logistics part of the business, where you can track any buy box issues, profitability issues, what's going on with competitors, sales in versus sales out. So there could be factors outside of advertising strategy. You could have the best ad strategy in the world. If your PDP isn't retail ready, or if there are factors outside of, you know, the ad manager's control that might be impacting the performance, you need to know about those things. So I think visibility on the entire Amazon sales cycle, not just ad cycle, is so important. And more and more brands that work with us are starting to combine the strategy of what's going on with their national account manager along with their marketplace manager to all pull in the same direction. So that's top tip from me.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, guys. That brings today's session to a close. So thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to you guys that have obviously joined us here today. If anybody has any questions, queries, wants to speak to any of the team or the guys individually, please let us know and we'll happily introduce you to them. But other than that, thank you very much for your time today.